That is the sound of chicken. Chicken wings frying at Niecy's, to be specific. That's a place for comfort food and classic breakfast a little ways down Troost from here. I'm Brian Ellison, in today for Gina Kaufman, and we'll get back to Niecy's in a little while today on the food show when we're talking about chicken, all about chicken. Food critics will tell us where to get the best chicken dishes all over town. We hope you will join them in telling us, but we're also answering the age-old question about which came first. And today on KCUR Central Standard, we have a definitive answer. It's the egg. Definitely the egg. We're talking first about eggs. Everything you always wanted to know about them, from hen to your quiches and benedicts and scrambles. We searched far and wide for the best eggspert we could find, and it's Darren Karcher, assistant professor of animal sciences at Purdue University, and he joins us by Skype this morning from West Lafayette, Indiana. Dr. Karcher, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
And first of all, you have a doctorate in poultry management. What would I have to do to get one of those?
So my education is mostly in animal science, but my focus was all related to poultry. So did some work with genetics and also did some work with growth and development. And I have a passion for poultry, so it made it pretty easy to be involved with those types of education.
Where did you get this passion for poultry?
I actually grew up with poultry. My parents own a mail order hatchery, and so was doing poultry related things as long as I can remember.
Mail order hatchery. See, this is everything that causes me to want to ask you more about this. How does that work?
So mail order hatchery. The people that want to have chicks in the backyard, so 4-H, FFA, as well as the small backyard producer, they can order chicks through the mail, and my parents are one of those people that they can order the chicks and receive those chicks through the mail.
So I have to admit that my partner and I had chickens at home for many years when we lived up in the Kansas City's Northland, and I would swear that the chickens that came from Desdemona and Henrietta Cluckers produced more flavorful eggs than the grocery store. Is that your experience?
Well, I would say that that is a perception. There are many people that believe that the eggs that they can gather in their own backyard or that they purchase from their local neighbor taste different from those that are located in the grocery store. But there's not a lot of science to really support that.
I'm hearing skepticism on your part.
Exactly.
Exactly. I see what you did there. So, okay. So well, let's talk about both kinds of eggs and tell me about the typical egg that I might go buy at the grocery store. Where has it been? How did it get there?
Sure. So when we look at our eggs that we purchase in the store, those are laid by hens that are in housing systems where there is usually significant automation. And so in some instances, from the time that that egg is laid by the hen until you actually open that egg at home, that egg has never been touched by human hands. It's completely automated. In other instances, if we start to look at some of our different labels, such as organic or pasture/free range, those systems may be more labor intensive, and so there may be hand collection as well as automation. So a little bit different for how those eggs may actually arrive in the grocery store.
But you're talking about the ways that they are distributed or collected. Are the eggs themselves any different?
Yeah, so when we look at the nutrition side of things, though, from the science standpoint, there is very little difference between the eggs that we can purchase. What differences there are typically pertain to eggs that have been pasture or free range, and we see that there is a change in the fatty acid profile in the yolk, as well as some of the vitamins, but they are not to a level that we can make a statement that they are going to enhance human health if you eat those types of eggs.
And I mean, how much consistency is there from egg to egg when we're talking about something like nutritional content? Does every egg that comes out of a particular production facility, is it essentially the same? Is even every egg that comes out of a particular chicken the same?
Yeah, so we'll touch on the chicken first. So typically, the way that a chicken lays an egg, so if it's one that has a particular spotted pattern on that egg, that hen will always lay that same spotted pattern on that egg. So from a hen consistency standpoint, yes, they are pretty close to identical every time. When we look then across, say, hundreds of chickens laying the egg, is there any nutritional difference? No, they're very similar. I'll throw out a guess here of probably in that upper 99 percentile of being identical. And so we have come up with a standard for the nutrient composition of a large egg, and we feel comfortable that all eggs are pretty close to that standard that we have established.
You mentioned that that hens will lay eggs with a particular pattern of egg, of color. How does an egg get its particular color or its particular spotted pattern anyway?
Yeah, so we have a couple of options. One is that we have birds that have genes, or they are genetically bred that lay a particular color pattern. And so that would typically be our Americanas or Araucanas. And those are what people refer to as their Easter egg chickens. And they lay pastel colored eggs, so blues, greens, reds.
This somehow seems unhealthy or bizarre.
It's not unhealthy. It is a little bit different. But if we start to look across nature and all the different colors that we may see, this is just something that hen evolved over time. And this is what the color pattern is that she opted to lay her eggs. We can also have our white eggs, our brown eggs. And then we can also start to look at turkey eggs where they have spots on them. Or if we look at our waterfowl eggs, they may be white or grayish in color or bluish green. So Mother Nature has designed some very creative ways to give us a variety of colors when we start talking about eggs.
Well, and okay, so you mentioned the brown eggs and the white eggs, and that seems like that's a source of a lot of controversy. I know people who would insist that brown eggs are better than white eggs. What makes an egg brown anyway?
Yeah, so the brown color on an egg is actually a byproduct of blood breakdown in the bird's body. And she doesn't know what to do with one of the products when she breaks down those red blood cells. And so she has found a creative way and she adds it to the outside of the egg. And that's what gives it the brown color. If you could, in fact, capture that brown egg right as it comes out of the hen as she lays it, you actually could smear off or rub off that brown color and have a white egg underneath.
That is fascinating. I had no idea about that. I think a lot of people didn't know that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. But again, there's really no difference about what's on the inside of the egg.
Exactly. And if we think about it from a more general perspective, the goal of an egg is to produce a baby chick for the next generation. So why would we want a lot of variation in the potential to reproduce the chicken? And so Mother Nature wanted to make sure that everybody was equal, irrespective of the color.
How about the color of the inside of the egg, the yolk? I would swear that the yolks of the chickens of the eggs that our chickens laid at home were a brighter, deeper orange than the paler yellow that we see in the grocery store eggs. Am I making that up?
Nope, absolutely not. So when we look at the yolk itself, we can actually change the coloration of the yolk, and this is related to the carotenoids or the color pigments that those birds are exposed to. And this exposure comes through bugs, grass, leafy greens, marigold petals, things like that. And what happens is as they consume those types of feedstuffs, they pull the color out and then they deposit that color into the yolk. And so if we have birds that are out on pasture or free range, we tend to see that those yolks are going to be a darker color because they are pulling more of the carotenoids out of their grasses and things that they're finding, and they're putting it into that yolk. In some instances, though, we can see that people are turned off because the yolk can be so rich in color, extremely orange, that it looks unnatural, that some people just don't find that attractive at all.
I love the way you personify the chickens when you talk about them, that she wanted to make her egg more yellow, her yolk more yellow.
Well, you know.
I imagine you, when you spend all your time working on poultry, you do start to associate some feelings with these chickens, right?
Well, I don't try to assign feelings per se, but, you know, I do respect what we ask those hens to do for us, which is to produce an egg. And it's something that we know from a nutrition standpoint is extremely beneficial to us as humans. So it's a level of respect for what we ask them to do.
Well, and speaking of that, I mean, one of the things that really struck me about chickens when I got to see them up close is just the sheer proficiency of the operation. That it was sort of miraculous to me that every single day I would walk out to the coop and there'd be a new egg from each chicken, when at their peak at least. A yolk, a white, a shell, the whole thing produced every day inside that little hen's body.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, she really puts herself through a lot to produce that egg, but we know that it's typical for birds to produce an egg every 24 to 26 hours.
And what goes into that? I mean, is it primarily a matter of sort of synthesizing the nutrients into this other form, or when you say she puts a lot into it, what is she doing?
Yeah, so she is not only pulling available nutrients from the diet that she's consuming, but from the perspective of the shell, she's actually pulling calcium out of her bones and her body to ensure that there's enough calcium going into the shell so that when that egg is laid, it's not going to break or be what is called thin-shelled, where there's not as much calcium available and so would cause an issue down the road if that egg was incubated and you tried to produce some progeny.
And is, I assume that must be why at some point in their life, chickens just stop laying eggs.
I don't know that for sure, but I would agree that that's a pretty good guess for why at some point they just are tired.
Or out of calcium.
Yeah, one of the two.
So talk to me about your research, as in what you'd be doing this morning if you weren't talking to a talk show host about eggs.
Yeah, so my research revolves around looking at hen housing systems. Right now, the table egg industry is going through a transition. We have been producing eggs in a housing system for the last 50 to 60 years. And there is a lot of pressure right now to move towards cage-free egg production, which is a major investment for the industry, somewhere around $4 to $6 billion. And so trying to help address some of those management questions and concerns that companies may have as they make that decision if they're going to make the transition or not.
Do you think that's a good shift? Should companies be moving toward cage-free eggs?
There was a research project that was completed in 2015 where we looked at the cage-free eggs, the way that we have done business in the conventional cage, as well as an intermediate type housing system called the enriched colony cage. And we identified lots of trade-offs between all three housing systems across five different sustainability areas. And so I don't necessarily preach that one type of system is good or bad, but if you look at the trade-offs, I think there are some reservations as we move towards cage-free egg production from a sustainability standpoint.
In other words, we may not financially want what we say we want there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I guess my last question to you, Darren, is do you enjoy eating eggs? You spend all your time studying them. Do you know too much about them, or do you still enjoy it?
Oh, no, I absolutely enjoy them. We actually have five kids, and so we go close to a dozen eggs a day.
Wow.
Through everybody eating eggs in the morning.
What's your favorite way to eat them?
We do all sorts, but probably my favorite is omelets.
Ah, well, I'll join you in that. I'm pro-omelet. That's Darren Karcher. He's assistant professor of animal sciences at Purdue University. He joined us by Skype. Darren, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And when we come back, after the egg comes the chicken. The food critics will be here with their picks for the best chicken in Kansas City, from gourmet to something in a plastic basket. What are your favorites? KCUR Central Standard wants to know, so stay with us.
Anything go with chicken. I mean, chicken is just about your number one meat these days. I mean, who doesn't like a good fried chicken?
Indeed, who wouldn't like that? That was Denise Hayes Ward. You may know her as Niecy, the owner of her namesake Southern soul food restaurant on Troost. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman, and we're getting ready to talk about chicken today on The Food Show here on KCUR's Central Standard. I'm pretty sure the chicken and waffles at Niecy's are on some of our critics' lists, so we sent out Andrea Tudhope to find out what goes into their signature dish.
Niecy opened this place back in 1985. Let's just say business has been good.
As a matter of fact, we came in number 3 in Kansas City's best fried chicken places, by the way. I felt like we should have been 1, but I'll take 3.
The food is Southern-style soul. Her mom is from Arkansas. Actually, Niecy was born there too, but her family moved to Kansas City back in 1957 when she was still pretty young.
I was a little girl here, but we always have roots there. We always went back there. They call it going down home when we leave to go back to visit. So
that's where Niecy's inspiration came from. Meatloaf, chicken and dressing, yams. That's what her mom used to cook for her family, and that's what Niecy learned to cook too, growing up. She was one of 8 kids.
We got 8 kids in the house. Somebody better figure out how to cook, because mom didn't do it all the time.
So most of the recipes at the restaurant came from her mom. But Niecy's is known for its chicken and waffles. Back in the 90s, a few years after opening her business, she traveled to Atlanta, Georgia, where she found Gladys Knight's Chicken and Waffles restaurant. She popped in for a little covert research.
So I kind of looked at it and how she did it. I said, you know what? Kansas City needs a chicken and waffle. Niecy's can do this.
So she brought it home and came up with her own recipe. Now, Niecy says she'll cook anything you want, any cut of chicken, any way you take it.
Our grilled wings are very popular, and our baked chicken, normally with dressing, is very popular way, but nothing today has beat them chicken and waffles.
Niecy's famous.
Okay, come on.
We slip our way into the kitchen. This is pre-lunch rush, and things are bustling. I'm getting the sense that there's no real lag time here. Chef Lerone Pryor is going to show us how to make the favorite dish. Maybe.
Paula here for real.
Paula couldn't be here.
Here's my question.
I tried my best.
Do you know how to make chicken and waffles?
Yeah. He makes them all the time.
I mean, Denise.
He's real shy.
Also, he doesn't even like chicken and waffles.
I'm a fish only, eat fish only.
But he most definitely knows how to cook it. He's been doing this for 27 years. Which means he's cooked this more times than he can count.
I can't even guess. For real, I can't even guess. I've made it over what? Over 1,000 or 2,000? Or more, way more.
He grabs a mixing bowl.
I'm gonna, this pancake mix. I'm gonna add eggs, oil, and a little vanilla flavor.
Plus some sugar and a little water.
You don't want it too thin, just to get the lumps out of it.
Then we head over to the waffle machine. It's totally caked. It looks like it's seen some waffles in its day. I mean that in the best possible way. So he's spraying the waffle machine. Says it'll be ready in about 3 minutes.
Let us know when it comes up golden brown.
Chef Fryer has managed to slip some wings in the fryer before I can even say, well, fried chicken. Golden brown seems to be the golden rule in here. The wings are light and glistening when he puts them on the plate.
Here's the wings, fresh out of the grease for you here. You want to give it a try?
Yeah, I do.
We put the whole wing on there. These are not chicken tenders. These are not wingettes. This is that whole actual home-style, old-fashioned wing with the tip and all on there because I love tips. So some people, I think, do too. So we leave everything on that wing for you.
The waffle is served with a gob of butter, a dash of powdered sugar, and fresh hot syrup on the side. There's a little debate about where the chicken belongs in this chicken and waffle dish.
Put chicken on top and cut it so she can get a bite of chicken and waffle.
You think so?
Yes, ma'am.
Niecy says it doesn't really matter where I put the chicken. But there are some rules.
I'm gonna tear the fork right into it.
Okay, I'm gonna
never eat a chicken, fried chicken with a fork. That's unacceptable.
The waffle is fluffy and sweet, even without the syrup. The wings are crunchy and greasy, sweet and salty. This is what it's about, why it's a tried and true combo.
It's giving you two types of flavors, what I get from it. And then it's kind of non-traditional. You can kind of mix in dinner with breakfast. And who say you can't do that? But here at Niecy's, we do it all.
That was Denise Hayes Ward, the original Niecy. The story was produced by KCUR's Andrea Tudhope. It's our Friday food show, and we're hunting around to peck the best chicken in Kansas City. The food critics are here. Charles Ferruza, good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
And Charles writes about food for The Independent and the Shawnee Mission Post. Jenny Vergara, hello.
Hello.
And a birthday coming up. Happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
She's contributing editor for Feast Magazine. And with the critics this time around is Carmen Gramajo. Hi, Carmen.
How are you?
She's the former chair of Comida, an annual Latin American food festival here in KC. I want to ask all of you, rarely do you hear about gourmet chicken dishes. I have to admit, when I go out to a nice restaurant, I'm a little hesitant to order the chicken. Does chicken get a bum rap, do you think, Charles?
I think these days every restaurant worth its salt has a chicken dish, if only because it's the most economical thing on the menu.
Yeah, I mean, restaurants have to have a chicken dish, but I would tell you the chefs aren't really enthused about chicken. I mean, it's not the sexiest protein, and there's other proteins, I think, that most chefs would probably want their customers to try.
What's wrong with it?
It's like the vodka of the chicken world.
The less flavor, the better?
Well, it takes on the flavor of whatever you put in it or put with it. So, it's just kind of a... And, you know, honestly, in this day and age, I eat an awful lot of chicken myself at home. So when I go out, I find myself thinking anything but chicken. I want to treat myself.
You think, Carmen, it suffers from familiarity?
I think so. Like you said, I mean, we mostly eat chicken at home. We prepare it our own way. So we want to be adventurous when we go out and eat something else.
And yet, chicken is part of this astonishing cross-section of cultures and price points. It is almost everyone eats chicken, and yet they don't when they go out to eat.
Well. There are people who are hardcore chicken people when they go out to eat. And, you know, in the Midwest, we have delicious ways to serve chicken, like fried and baked and broiled and wood-fired and rotisserie. I mean, there's lots of different ways to have it. But there are people who are hardcore chicken lovers when they go out, and they're just looking for, and you know, if you look at most menus, I think chefs tend to take a very comforting approach with chicken. There's not a lot of avant-garde chicken dishes out there. Maybe some preparations might be a little avant-garde.
I mean, once you find the right place to have good chicken, you'll go back for that specific
there
dish.
You go.
And I think that's what we have on our list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess I'm curious, though. As you said, Jenny, it's sort of the vodka. It's the clean slate. It
right.
tastes like what you do with it, not what it tasted. But is that completely true? I mean, there is a difference in the quality of chickens that you can get, right?
Well, I mean, I was thinking, you know, there are certain chicken restaurants in town that, you know, they use chicken breasts that are almost steroidal. They're so big.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of miss those, you know, old school chicken breasts that look kind of scrawny-ish.
Well, and there's an awful lot of home cooked, like we were talking about, where's the chicken and dumplings? You know, where's the old fashioned
fricassee.
Pot pies and, you know, things of days gone past? You know, those dishes are hard to find now, so...
Well, we don't want you to have to be brooding about this anymore at home. We want you to be able to express your favorite place to get chicken in Kansas City. So give us a call at 816-235-2888. Good old-fashioned fried chicken's fine, but bonus points for unusual or off-the-beaten-path chicken dishes. Again, 816-235-2888. And I want each of our critics' number one choice, Carmen Gramajo.
Okay, well, I'm just going to go with my Latin roots El Pollo Rey.
El Pollo Rey.
I think anybody has experienced El Pollo Rey. It's not only just the experience in going to get it, but how you eat it. Simple. It's just grilled chicken. Their flavoring is already there, you know, kind of for the years that they have been doing it. But just make sure you get the avocados and you get the tortillas and the pickled onions. That's all you need.
And you put it together in the tortilla?
Yes, you can get a half or a whole chicken. And then you just take the pieces and put in your tortillas, and that's all you need. I would recommend to take it home if you have to go back to work, because you will smell like chicken.
This is good to know. I will say our senior producer, Sylvia Maria Gross, wanted to make sure El Pollo Rey got mentioned.
It is on the list.
Well.
It's a wonderful place.
And Charles, what's your number one?
My number one. What is my number one? I'm looking at my list here.
or in your top three, let's say.
Well, I love the chicken and waffles at Niecy's, which we had talked about earlier, because I love that combination of slightly salty, greasy chicken and, you know, the sweetness of the maple syrup, which usually isn't maple syrup. And I do like the chicken and waffles at McCoy's Public House. It's kind of an herby sort of a fried chicken. I like it.
It seems funny to me to mix those dinner and breakfast flavors at that point. The really savory chicken with whatever herbing, and then the maple syrup. But for some reason it works.
Well, for some reason it can work. I've eaten in restaurants where it doesn't.
But isn't that kind of a late night staple? I mean, kind of the breakfast meets dinner. Carmen kind of alluded to this earlier in a conversation. I mean, when is it exactly that you would eat chicken and waffles? Probably after midnight.
Right.
Probably after midnight. So
the waffles sopping up whatever it may need to sop up.
Right. Yes. All of that. Yeah.
And how about you, Jenny? What's your number one chicken choice?
My curveball pick for today is Chicken and Pickle, standing for Pickleball, which is up north. This place is doing rotisserie chicken, and it's really good. I mean, considering that I think their main business is probably pickleball courts. If you've never played, you should make a reservation and go. But they do have the restaurant open now, and it's rotisserie chicken, basically, that's wood-fired, and you can get it seasoned with juniper and rosemary, jerk seasoning, or seven chili. And the sides are really great. It's like cathead biscuits, tater tots, spicy slaw, barbecue beans. Really, really just good. Like, get a whole bunch of food and just bring friends.
You should say what the provenance of that place is. The culinary provenance.
Oh, well, I'll let you. Okay. Go ahead.
What is the culinary provenance
of that place? You've got the history.
Well,
Charles.
You know, I mean, I would never...
Because it doesn't sound like a gourmet establishment, Chicken and Pickle.
Well, it was started by Bill Crooks, who was one of the founders of PB&J restaurants, who is a very, very talented chef. And
smart man, too.
And I told him, you could never catch me going to a place called Chicken and Pickle because it involves sports of some kind.
Right.
And I'm at the age right now where I'm not chasing a little ball anywhere. Golf anywhere else.
I took my son, my 14-year-old son, and we had a blast. And the other thing I should say is that if you can't get a court or you haven't made a reservation to play pickleball, they do have plenty of yard games. I mean, if it's a gorgeous day, there's plenty to do outside of pickleball and lots of tossing of beanbags and, you know, different things.
Pickleball is a ball and racket game for those who are
yeah,
not familiar.
Yeah, it's sort
with
of
that.
Like badminton and tennis.
Badminton and ping pong and tennis.
Invented near
racquetball.
Not far from my home in Washington State about 50 years ago. But I digress.
Was it called pickleball then?
It was called pickleball, and it was a family backyard invention. But we digress from our food topic here on KCUR's Central Standard. We're looking for the best chicken dishes in Kansas City, and we know many of you have suggestions as well. Starting with Danny, who called us at 816-235-2888, called from Kansas City. Hi, Danny.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well. What's your favorite chicken dish in town?
Well, I want to recommend the Campo Lindo from Yaya's.
Ah.
It is absolutely amazing.
What do you like about it?
Well, I think it's called spatchcocked, where they flatten it out and then, you know, so they get it kind of grilled and crispy, you know, and then it comes with a sauce that is just to die for, and it's got like little capers, but like our bigger capers that kind of have a stem, little chili peppers, and then they have a lot of potatoes that are really crispy, and I always order it with like extra sauce, and when I go with family, we all get it. But anyway, I've gone so many times and used to get something different, just, you know, and I always regret not getting it because everyone else, they continue to get it, and I look over like, oh, I made a mistake. So now I always get it every time I go. It is just amazing.
You know what you like. Well, thanks for calling, Danny.
Thank you.
What is spatchcocking anyway?
Oh, I have a T-shirt that says spatchcocking.
What does it mean?
Yes.
Please tell
us. I do. You know, spatchcocking is a wonderful way to evenly cook a whole bird. So you basically just split the bird, and so it's the entire bird basically lays flat. So the rib cage is broken kind of in two and lays flat on the grill. The legs are kind of splayed out. And spatchcocking is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really hot a couple of years ago. And people, I noticed this year for Thanksgiving, were spatchcocking their turkeys and putting them on the grill. So it goes, bigger birds, it works well too. But it's a great way to evenly cook chicken.
Now you know. Let's take one more. Judy called us from Kansas City. Hi, Judy.
Hi. So I like the chicken wings at China Feast. They're little drive-through China
on Linwood. Well, they have other locations
too. There's one on Linwood, but they're all over the city. I don't know if they have chicken wings at all of them. But that's where I get them, is on Linwood.
What's so good about the wings there, Judy?
They're big. They're always freshly hot and fried. They're cheap. They have just the right amount of breading on them, and I don't eat them with any sauce or anything. But the only sauce you could get there, if you're a chicken wing aficionado, which I'm normally not, is the Chinese type sauces. But the hot mustard is really nice on them.
Well, I appreciate the call, Judy. Thanks so much. Wings are a common favorite. I know from the social media I saw this morning. Do you guys have some favorite wing spots, Carmen?
Yeah, the Peanuts on Main specifically.
Mm. You have to talk about the wings at Peanuts.
Right?
You do.
Cold beer and some chicken wings at the Peanuts. They're big and they're saucy. You get messy. You have to be prepared for that. It doesn't matter because it tastes so good, and you definitely want to lick your fingers afterwards.
Mm. So the opposite end of that spectrum would be the Mason Jar Bar and Grill, I think it's called. And it's kind of over more west of Kansas City. But this place Frenches the bone on their chicken breasts and push all the meat and skin down. So it's almost like a little meat popsicle.
Lollipop?
Yeah,
yeah.
Kind of a meat lollipop. So and
that's called Frenching the bone.
Frenching the bone.
Oh, okay.
Just pulling the meat off of it. And so I kind of love that in three bites I can have a chicken wing without all the muss and fuss.
Right, because as we've discussed on the barbecue show a year or more ago, I don't like getting my fingers messy when I eat. So this is
you must
this is
if you go to the Peanut.
I got a recommendation from Chad on Facebook, actually, for Charbar's chicken wings.
They're very good.
I have to agree. They're big. They're really big. The size is pretty big.
That seems to be the common thread. What makes a good chicken wing? Large quantity.
More meat.
More meat. Before we take a break, Charles, I know that we did have a whole show on fried chicken, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on fried chicken today, but you have a favorite that I think is a perennial favorite in Kansas City.
Stroud's?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Stroud's. You know, I won't say that Stroud's is my favorite fried chicken restaurant in the history of me going out to eat, but... I like it. I think the chicken's always moist. The side dishes, okay. The gravy, terrible. But there's something about the combination of all of that stuff that kind of works there.
And the family style, I think, is what a lot of people love about it. Are there other fried chicken recommendations that you all would want to lift up?
I think we have to give a shout out to Go Chicken Go.
We do.
We did talk about them while we were out there. But I do the chicken tenders, which are giant. Talk about giant. I mean, like half a breast, maybe.
Wow.
Just big. And they come in a kit with two, I think. And I don't even mess with sides. I mean, just go get the two strips and you're good to go. I mean, it's almost like eating a full fried chicken breast. But it's delicious.
Crispy. I used to live a couple of blocks away from Go Chicken Go in my 20s. And you must say that the smell will kind of get old. Not after you said, like, after midnight, you get a three-piece box, and that's all you need.
Right. I think the
your
smell
friends will
is...
be coming over for an after chicken party.
See, I live near Go Chicken Go, at least the one on Truce, now, and I gain 10 pounds just smelling the place. I don't dare go in.
You know, you would think that it's really greasy, but it's really not when you get it. They do it well. And make sure you get a side of G sauce in case you want to.
I was going to say, their sauce is really fun, really interesting. It's delicious.
Also, I should say that they have the best chicken livers in town. They really
I've heard that as well. I've heard that as well.
Several of you also mentioned Gus's as a fried chicken destination, which I'm gonna echo that one too. Carmen, what's so good about it?
Sure, I tried it for the first time a few weeks ago, and we just really enjoyed. My husband and I enjoyed that. You know, they it's that batter that I guess it has Louisiana hot sauce.
Yeah,
it's
so spicy.
It's a spicy batter already, so you don't need to add anything else to it. It was great. It wasn't so crispy and it wasn't so greasy, and the Louisiana hot sauce definitely came through.
We've got one caller with a fried chicken pick at 816-235-2888. Jeff in Blue Springs. Hi, Jeff.
I'm going to echo the statement from the one of the hosts, Strouds. I grew up in Kansas City and moved away for about 25 years, lived in Orlando, Florida, and Phoenix, Arizona. But I grew up on a farm, and every Sunday my grandmother would cook fresh chicken. And so the problem is that once you get something in your head from being a child, you chase that for the rest of your life, right? And Strouds does a pretty good job. They're mashed potatoes and gravy. And, of course, a good gravy is necessary to enjoy good fried chicken. And while I don't agree that it's bad, I think that it's at least passable, right? And the chicken here in Kansas City in the Missouri area is much better than you find anywhere else. I mean, everybody comes in and talks about, oh, the barbecue. Well, you know, it's also, the chicken, trust me.
All right. We'll lift up the Kansas City chicken prowess in the future. Thanks so much for the call, Jeff. We're feeling a little cooped up, so we're going to take one more break. When we return, we'll continue on Central Standard with finding the best place to pick up chickens in Kansas City. And if you have a favorite, you can call us at 816-235-2888. Not just fried chicken anymore. All kinds of chicken. Give us a call and stay tuned. We're back on KCUR Central Standard, and there ain't nobody here but us chickens. I'm Brian Ellison in for Gina Kaufman with Charles Ferruza, Jenny Vergara, and Carmen Gramajo. They're the food critics. And chicken is our subject today, the best in Kansas City in any form. And we talked already about fried chicken. I think everyone loves that. But what's the most unusual or distinctive chicken preparation that you love in Kansas City? Jenny Vergara?
I'm going to give a shout out to Shio Ramen on this. We are overrun with ramen shops, mm-hmm. thankfully, so plenty of options. But Shio Ramen that's on Broadway is doing a version of ramen that is chicken and coconut curry broth. And I got to tell you, anything with coconut in it, I'm all about. Mm. It's got pickled cabbage, chicken, scallion, lime, and a little chili oil. So there's a little bit of spice to it. So it's kind of this interesting Southeast Asian tour kind of through a bowl of ramen, basically. Just absolutely delicious. I'm just crazy about the broth in this particular ramen. So that's kind of my homage to something a little different, yeah. Chicken-wise.
See, there again, I always think I should get pork or mm-hmm. when I go to a ramen place, but here's a chicken dish I need to
try. I think if you cook any protein low enough and slow enough, it'll give its flavor 10 times over.
Carmen Gramajo?
I'm actually going to go with Pierre Ponce. We just had a holiday dinner there, and we had the chicken roulade. That's totally an old school dish, and just rolled and stuffed with cheese and spinach. It was still moist, and it looked beautiful. It came with horseradish mashed potatoes that I think it made the dish even more delicious, and some Brussels sprouts on the side.
Mm. Now we're getting into
the roulade is time. Kind of a newer version of chicken in terms of more fine dining presentation. I mean, it's usually done in a sous vide machine. It's tied tight, you know, made into that cylinder roll and then cooked until it's really tender. So it makes for a beautiful presentation, these sliced rolls. So a big shout out for that as well. That's a relatively new technique that the chefs seem to be using.
Hmm. Charles Ferruza, you have a unique chicken pick?
No.
Oh, well, fine then.
I don't tend to order anything that sounds too complicated or weird with chicken because I just know I'm not going to like it. Although I would try the that dish from Shio Ramen. Mm-hmm. I did taste recently a really, really old school, kind of a grandmother school chicken dish from the new King's Table Soul Food at 59th and Prospect. It's sort of a staple of soul food restaurants anyway. Baked chicken with dressing. Very comforting, very bland. It's the kind of chicken dish you want when you don't want to expend too much energy, even chewing. It's baked chicken's usually very soft.
And, fall off the bone.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this restaurant. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it was very good.
It's 60th and Prospect or so, you said.
59th 32. And yeah, okay. And it was good. And, you know, I'm all about soul food.
Okay, fair enough. You know, a lot of folks in Kansas City seem to find comfort food in the chicken spadini at Garozzo's or maybe a few other places, but at least on Facebook, I'm seeing a lot of shouts out to Garozzo's. In fact, that was on your list, wasn't it, Jenny?
It was on my list. I don't know that we can really talk about chicken and not talk about that dish. You know, Grozzo's claims to have invented spadini, but I've seen versions of it, obviously, in many restaurants in Kansas City. But I have to give them a shout out. The location in Columbus Park still delivers kind of the original, quaint Grozzo's experience.
For those who haven't had it, what is chicken spadini?
It's basically chicken that has been, it's got breadcrumbs, a little bit of breadcrumbs, but mostly garlic. I mean, the main ingredient in chicken spadini is garlic. And then it's basically kind of cooked in oil, and it's rolled to a certain degree. It's kind of usually on some sort of skewer. But it's the garlic, it's a little crunch of the breadcrumb, and then this tender chicken meat. And it's just...
Doesn't Grozzo's have like 7 or 8 versions of it?
Yeah, they do. Oh, there's some herbs too in there somewhere as well. Yeah. It's really vampire chicken. I mean, garlic is the main, like, pow bam in this dish.
So. You know, there was a reason I liked it.
It's a very comforting dish, and it's really good with pasta, even a mild, you know, oily pasta. But it's a dish that has really become so beloved in Kansas City.
Yep.
I was going to say, with the same preparation of the chicken spadini, the chicken Beatrice at Carmen's is really good as well. It has lemon and capers, but it is that kind of skewered chicken in, you know, kind of cooked with your pasta on the side.
Very good. 816-235-2888 is where Joe called us from Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Joe.
Good morning.
Where do you recommend for the best chicken in town?
Well, I'd like to recommend the Palestine Senior Center at 33rd and Prospect. On Thursdays, they have some of the best fried chicken that I know of in town, and I kind of grew up in the South, and I like, soul food and the side dishes that go with it. But their chicken is very good. People come in, off the job, and then they're just cafeteria style. But this chicken is always very delicious.
And Joe, that's at the Senior Center. Is it open to the public?
Yes, it's open to the public. And some people just come in and order it and take out, and some people also, stay and eat cafeteria style.
Yeah, that's a good find. I think you've come up with one that our critics have not checked out themselves. So it's going on the list. Thanks a lot, Joe.
Making notes now.
Appreciate it. We also have a call here from Kim in Overland Park. Let's talk to Kim. Hi, Kim.
Hello.
What's your recommended place for chicken in KC?
Well, I like Dragon Inn in Overland Park. In the spring, they have chicken with asparagus, and it is the bomb. The real tender, small asparagus, and the chicken is pretty thin, and it's just always good. A couple times a month. It's only through like March, April, May, but then any other chicken with vegetables, and then they start chicken with green beans and. But I've been going there about 30 years, and it's very, very good.
It's the Dragon Inn down in Overland Park. Thanks a lot, Kim.
Thank you.
Sorry, Kim, we lost you. A lot of folks are recommending Asian dishes, Chinese restaurants, chicken dishes.
It's the year of the rooster, baby.
Well, then I guess it's the year to eat roosters, apparently. What do you like, Charles, in the Asian category?
I like... many Asian chicken dishes. I on my list here, I'm still looking for, which I apparently used to be easier to find than it is now, Springfield-style cashew chicken, which is like
Springfield, Missouri?
Springfield, Missouri. And that dish was created there, right, Jen?
It was.
What is the distinctive quality of Springfield cashew chicken?
Well, it's battered and fried, unlike any other cashew chicken you'll find anywhere. And Springfield's a relatively small-ish town, and isn't there like 110 Chinese restaurants serving Springfield cashew chicken?
Yes, but there's one family, one gentleman that has kind of been given the crown for inventing this dish. You know, trying to figure out some dish that the folks of Springfield would eat at his Chinese restaurant, and he figured by frying the chicken that might be
battering,
and then they might understand that
it has sort of a soy and oyster sauce.
That's right.
It's really actually kind of a bland dish, but it's just the combination of whatever that oyster soy sauce is.
It's beige. I mean, the dish is a beige dish.
Right.
There's not a lot of color in it. You're right.
But I'll be interested if any of our listeners know where to find it in Kansas City, because I know that Firewalk in Mission used to have it. They don't anymore.
All right. If you know a source for Springfield-style Cashew Chicken in Kansas City. Call us now at 235-2888. Gavin in Kansas City, you have a Chinese food dish that you like.
Yeah, good morning. I wanted to recommend the Blue Koi Black Bean Chicken at Blue Koi on 39th Street.
Okay, what do you like about it?
I just like that it's got, I mean, the sauce is to die for, first off. But it's got a good mix of chicken with your mushrooms and different peppers.
Okay, good to know.
And then you get
I appreciate it, Gavin. Thanks so much for the call.
Awesome, thank you.
An area of chicken we haven't talked about yet is chicken salad, but there are some really good chicken salads around town, Carmen.
There is. You know, there is that a good chicken salad sandwich is a good thing to find for, you know, and to have in your repertoire, I think. I really like the classic cookie. It's just they have the right amount of mayonnaise, the right amount of chicken and...
Do they have celery in it?
They have celery and also... grapes.
Oh, that's a good combination.
So on top of greens or in a sandwich, they're always really good. I mean, it's been over a decade that I've liked their chicken salad, one of my favorites.
Cafe Europa also has a top-notch chicken salad.
You know that one. What do you think, Jenny?
Yeah, I have that one on my list too, the Cafe Europa version. And the thing about chicken salad you have to know is that if you talk to restaurateurs, they will tell you if they're open for lunch, and I blame the ladies who lunch for this one, that chicken salad's always number one with a bullet. Like if they have a chicken salad on the menu, it's always the thing that's ordered. And I don't know if it's just so complicated to get, you know, the nuts and the fruit and the cheese and whatever else is grapes, whatever else is in it at home to make it at home as to why it would be so popular. But the one at Cafe Europa, and I should mention they have two locations now in Crestwood and in Union Hill. But theirs has roasted chicken, walnuts, goat cheese, dried cranberries, and then this kind of Dijon mustardy vinaigrette, which is just delicious.
All right. Speaking of complicated dishes to make, Amy in Overland Park, what is your recommendation?
The chicken mole at Dos Reales.
What do you like about it?
Well, it's kind of, I call it chocolate chicken because it's got a cocoa base, you know, so, and it's got kind of a chocolate and then, you know, spicy. It's kind of think of the Christopher Elbow chili chocolate. And, you know, it's got that beautiful sauce over the chicken. The chicken is really tender. They just do it right.
Okay. I appreciate that. That's Dos Reales, which is where?
They have several locations, but the one we go to is on 75th in Overland Park.
All right. Thanks so much, Amy. Let's take one more from Rebecca in Shawnee. Hi, Rebecca.
Hello.
What's your recommendation?
I would have to recommend at Grunauer's down at the Freight House. It's called, I might be pronouncing it wrong, but the Paprika Hoon Chicken. It's like paprika chicken with a creamy sauce over it.
Hmm. What's so good about it as far as you're concerned?
I mean, it's just, you don't find a lot of European, like Central European restaurants in town. So it's a really different take, and it's not like anything I've had before. But it's a really amazing balance, and you don't find paprika chicken very often either. And, I mean, it's honestly delicious with the creamy sauce over it. There's nothing I can say bad about it.
All right, Rebecca. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Last chance. One more that we haven't talked about yet that you don't want this hour to go by without mentioning, Carmen Gramajo?
For me, it would be pot pie. Their pan-roasted chicken is delicious. It's one of the best ones I've ever had.
Ah, that does sound really tasty. Maybe for lunch. How about you, Jenny?
I'm going to go to Misab. That's also on Broadway with their jerk chicken. They do a really deep, beautiful jerk chicken. And, you know, it's a very simple place. You have to kind of push past the decor. Service is great. Food is great.
Any last gasps, Charles Ferruza?
Roast chicken at Costco. It's the cheapest deal in town.
Gourmet. I did have someone suggest Hen House has a nice fried chicken at lunch, too.
Okay.
All right. Well, my thanks to the food critics Carmen Gramajo, Jenny Vergara, and Charles Ferruza. Good to see you all.
Good to see you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
You remember, you can find all their recommendations for chicken and everything they said on the air, and even the ones they didn't get to at kcur.org later today. We'll have our callers' recommendations there, too. You can always listen back to this conversation and all the others at kcur.org/centralstandard. Catch up on our shows there and catch up on our conversations on Twitter as well. We're at KCURCST, and I'm at PTS Brian. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. Caitlin Troutman is our intern. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day, and our music is by Spoonbender Labs. If you like Central Standard, our team, together with producer Matt Hodapp, is also producing a podcast. It's called Midwesternish, and you should definitely check it out. Gina Kaufman's back Monday. I'm Brian Ellison. Stay tuned now for the Media Critics on Up to Date, and have a great weekend.